Hello, everybody. Hey, I'm selling brains here. I'm selling all kinds of brains. You're going to find out they're very cheap, too. Yeah. Anybody? Mr. Kraling, nice to see you here.
Hello. You're selling brains, huh?
That's right. Now I tell you what I do. You buy from me today, and I'll tell you what I do. I'll throw in the transplant free.
Free, huh? Yeah. Well, I had this one for a long time. You don't have one with hair, do you?
Oh, Mr. Kraling, no. The fellow down the street, he's selling hair brains.
How much are these brains?
The price varies. It depends on which one you want.
Then I can have my choice.
Huh? Sure. You get to pick your own brain. Oh, who wrote this stuff? Well, anyway, look here. This brain here, see it? Yeah, this one here. This belonged to the president of Harvard University. This brain goes for $5,000.
Well, I should hope it's installed, huh?
Right. Well, okay, so now look at this second brain. This one on page two. This one.
Okay.
This one. There's a brain here, right here. This brain here is a Nobel Prize winner. Can you say Nobella?
Nobella.
Hey, that's good. Oh. You're bilinguini.
Thanks.
It's all right. That brain there goes for $10,000. Now look at this third brain. That's the third of three. This brain here belonged to the fellow who wrote the script. And this brain goes for $35,000.
Now, wait a minute. Let me get this straight. The brain of the Harvard president, $5,000?
Yeah, yes, that's right, yeah.
And the brain from the Nobel Prize winner, $10,000.
Yeah, that's right, $10,000.
And the brain for the man who wrote this sketch is $35,000.
Yeah.
Why so much?
Well, because it's never been used.
Oh, boy.
Wow. Okay.
That's,
flashback Twin Cities. Saturday, June 1st.
Good.
And I'm here with the legends of broadcasting,
whoa,
Bud Kraling,
whoa,
and Alan Lotsberg.
Wow.
Thank you, and welcome.
How did he get top billing here?
Let's see, K before L.
Hey, before
paid him off.
That was pretty lucky of me, wasn't it? I had to come up with a fast answer. The sketch you just heard, this is from the new Fogey Follies.
Yes. I'll give you a brief history of that. My wife and I, Jackie, the joy of my life, we decided we're going to do senior theater because it was doing well elsewhere around the country.
Mm-hmm.
And so I said, we need some money. And she said, talk to your brother. He's got a lot of money. And I said, okay. So I borrowed 10 grand from my brother, spent it all on sets and tickets and this and that. And I wrote and produced the show, and Jackie handled all the tickets and the rehearsals and all that. She's the brains and I'm the mouth for the theater. New Fogey Follies. It was on for 17 years. We opened in 1993 and closed 17 years later. And one of the highlights was, several of the highlights was, Bud Kraling would come out, and he and I would do some shtick. You know, he'd do a pants drop, and I'd say, hey, put your clothes on. Come on. And so,
what kind of show was this? I'm not sure if we want to see this kind of
no
stuff.
That was interesting.
Vaudeville, I guess.
Vaudeville, yeah.
Vaudeville.
It was vaudeville.
I'm not sure, but if we have pants drop, I'm not sure if this is appropriate for this audience.
That's the old vaudeville. Burlesque, maybe.
Yeah, maybe that's more
burlesque
like
burlesque with you guys.
And it ran thank you. It ran for 17 years, and we always had a good time. But besides doing on stage shtick with me, he handled follow spot, and he'd do some of the sound stuff, and so he was a technician as well as a showboat.
Wow. So this is Flashback Twin Cities on KLDB, and I'm Tom Osmond, joined again by the broadcast legends Alan Lotsberg and Bud Kraling, both of WCCO-TV for, I think collectively, if we added both Bud's years and your years, we're looking at
12 centuries.
About 12 centuries, right.
At least. Yeah.
But before the call letters WCCO existed on TV, Bud, right? You were there when it was
WTCN. We were in the Wesley Temple building over by the Minneapolis Auditorium.
And for our younger audience who know WTCN as Channel 11, there's a little bit of a story behind this. It was WTCN was on Channel 4, and they shared that signal, correct?
Originally, as a radio station, they had the ABC network. And we had Walter Winchell on Sunday night.
Wow.
Oh, we were really
hot I've heard of him,
stuff.
Yeah.
Well, then the owners of WTCN Radio got a license to go into TV, so they changed us one weekend from the Wesley Temple Building over to 9th Street, and we became Channel 4. It originally was WTCN Channel 4.
Until you got the more prestigious WCCO call letters, correct?
Right, yeah. I think that changed over about 1952.
And you were there for it.
Yes, I started at WTCN in 1946, and I wound up in 1996, so they kind of let me hang around for yeah. 50 years or so.
And, Al, you were there for 25 years?
Yeah, I think so. I came in 61 or 2, I can't recall, but I came to work, and I wanted to apply for a job in the promotion department. Tom Cousins was the program director, promotion director at the time. And he said, well, can you talk? Can you write? And I said, sure, I do all that. And he said, can do impressions? I did a dog impersonation. And
oh.
So he says, you're hired. So he hired me. I think it was $400 a month. And I did promotion spots, and I got to work with everybody writing these pieces and then producing them for advertising their own programs on the air.
So I'm picturing the job interview. Did you just bark like a dog for 20 minutes, and then they gave you a job? Is that
That's how that works.
Okay, great. Sure.
Here's how to learn it. If you go,
what kind of a dog is that?
Oh, that was a Chihuahua St. Bernard combination.
Okay. You know, we have a recent Brown graduate in the next room there, and he needs some tips on how to get a good, you know, because he's great here, but he wants to get a morning spot in New York or L.A.
Oh, of
course. So we're going to try to get him to go bark like a dog for his next job interview. And I think that
they don't even have to ask.
That's right.
How would you do a Pekingese?
A Pekingese?
A Pekingese.
Okay. All
that's
right.
It.
Well,
that's it.
He's got
good.
It.
We've covered that topic now. Okay.
$400 a month.
You're supposed to say, moving on. Bud, yeah. Bud and Dave Moore, for years and years and years, did what they call happy talk. And it was, you know, chatting between the two of them and saying, oh, boy, your fly's open and stuff like that.
I don't remember that, but
oh, yeah.
It's okay. All
but
right.
Then the happy talk went on and on, and then it got to be there was more happy talk than there was news or anything
yes,
else. But it
yeah,
was just yeah. – they started that stuff.
So we have you to blame for it all then, Bud.
Yes.
Yeah, I think we did a good job. We think of something kind of clever to say that bridged the gap between the hard news and the weather. And one time Dave said to me, you know, I think we've foisted this whole terrible idea on the whole industry, this happy talk. But I thought we were pretty good.
I did too.
Well, people watched. It was people were watching. You guys did pretty well. You did something that not many people are going to do in these markets now is stay at the same station for 50 years and be on the same newscast for, you know, good 30 years.
Yes. Yes, that doesn't happen anymore. There's lots of changes going on, or people get tired of working there, or get something better.
I have, actually, speaking of happy talk, let's listen to a clip from December 1973, shall we?
Yeah. Okay.
So often I get the question, is Bud Kraling really a weatherman, or does he just read some information prepared for him by someone else? Where do you get your weather from, Bud?
Well, a lot of it comes out of the West.
I mean, all those charts and graphs and instruments you use.
Oh, well, they don't mean very much. I usually call the Weather Bureau.
Call the Weather Bureau?
Yeah, I say, hi there, what's the weather? And I write it down, and then I say it out loud to the folks.
Well, don't you have to study the high and low pressure systems and the occluded fronts and the stationary troughs and all that sort of thing?
Well, they have a way of working out.
But what has the way of working out?
Well, those things, whatever you said, those fronts, those things.
Yeah. What kind of education does one need to be a television weatherman?
What do you mean?
Well, I mean such a technical subject as meteorology. It must require some special training.
Oh, well, just living here in Minnesota is an education in the weather.
Well, how do you mean?
Well, like in the summertime, I go outside and the sky is dark and I know it's going to rain.
And if it doesn't rain?
Well, then we'd go on a picnic.
When did you first get the idea that you wanted to be a television weatherman?
Oh, I was a lad in grade school, and I'd wear my raincoat, and it wouldn't rain.
Mm-hmm.
And then I wouldn't wear it, and it would rain.
So?
Well, I knew I was qualified right there to be a weatherman.
It's kind of disappointing, really, to find out that you're not a...
I get tired of people talking to me about the weather all the time, really. Why don't you ask me about my hobbies or current events?
What about current events?
Well, I'm not so hot on current events. I never listen to you when you're doing the news. I'm working on the weather.
Yeah, I understand. The folks on the street, people on the street you see all the time, what's the question most frequently asked?
Well, in the summertime, they ask me, is it hot enough for you? And then in the wintertime, they say, is it cold enough for you?
And what do you answer?
Yeah, it is.
There you go.
I love that part. Dave wrote the questions and he wrote the answers for me. And one afternoon we sat down. The reason it's still around, I think, one afternoon we sat down and recorded that, and he played it then on the bedtime news that night. And I don't know how many times he had some excuse for running that. He just loved
it. It's a great video, and this can be seen on tcmedianow.com. If you want to hear Bud Kraling and Dave Moore do the weather again, the news again, you can't watch it on Channel 4, but you can see it on tcmedianow.com.
Great.
So, and Al, let's talk about you a little bit, because a lot of people may not know the name Al Lotsberg, but they do know the name Willie.
Willie, my other name?
Yes.
Yeah, Robert Redford.
Right.
A lot of people don't know that, but we are one and the same. But, yeah, Alan Lotsberg is known in theater world. I've been doing this for 50 years, but in 62 or 3, I went up to Harry Jones, the producer for the kids' show, and he was doing Axel and His Dog at that time, and Carmen the Nurse was going on, and so was, we followed Captain Kangaroo from Network. And so one day I came into the office for Tom, the promotion director, and I said, why don't you talk to Harry Jones and tell him I do puppetry? And Tom Cousin said, do you do it? And I said, no, but I'd like to try it.
Sure.
It's like John Wayne, you ever know how to ride a horse? Sure. What's a horse look like?
Right.
But so I did, and I auditioned with a puppet, and it was I did a little witch called Vivian Vulture. So that was the first thing was, can I do a little Vivian Vulture here just for a moment? I said, well, she talked like this. Hello. Oh, nice to see you. My. Which way to the toilet? And so that was the beginning of it. And then I said, well, maybe later we'll do the puppet. Maybe I can come out and I can be seen. And Harry Jones, the producer, said, sure. So we did that. I came sliding out on a box, and I opened my mouth, and nothing came out. And it was embarrassing. I stood there for about 3 days and never moved. But the point is that I started with a puppet, Vivian Vulture, and then I got to be Willie Ketchum. John Gallus, dear John Gallus, was Clancy the cop for a while. Then he was Clancy, just a plainclothes cop. And so he needed a sidekick. And so they said, well, let's get Alan here, and he can do that Willie Ketchum. It's a detective agency. So the question is, Willie Ketchum? And the answer is, I doubt it. I couldn't catch a cold in my days. But we did that for a while, and then I got to be a co-character with John Gallus. And the two of us did that for 17 years, I believe. And then John and Mary left television, Mary Davies,
right.
Carmen. And so then I did, what the hell, Alan's Window. It was from, that was
okay, Alan's Window. What do you do in your window?
Well, I cleaned it on Tuesdays.
Right. I don't do windows. So what's that?
So I didn't want to do any more dorky stuff for kids. I said, let's teach them something. So I'd bring in guests from the Science Museum, and we'd talk about solar energy and this and that, and it was just boring. So it bombed.
You know, the Bozo the Clown show at one point, when the FCC tried to make TV for kids more educational, they had to make Bozo the Clown. Instead of throwing pies at other clowns, he had to start doing science stuff and start educating. That lasted about 6 months, and they canceled Bozo in Chicago. So yep. I can understand the challenge.
It's got to be entertaining, or they get that stuff at school, and we were
right.
trying to enhance that,
right.
But it didn't work. It backfired. So we went back to pants drops and drooling on camera.
Who doesn't like that?
And tripping over each other. I don't know why. Somebody was talking about a pie here a minute ago. One time, John Gallus and I were doing live in Studio 4. We heard the theme. What was that?
The Warner Brothers theme?
Clancy and Willie theme.
Oh, sure.
Spike Jones, I think it was. And so John didn't know this, but I thought, I got to do this. I want it to be spontaneous, and it's live. So I didn't even tell Harry Jones, the producer. But I got this giant cream pie, and I put it under the table. We're standing there, and they said, stand by in the studio. 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. Camera. And I took the pie and slammed it right into John Gallus's face. He didn't expect that. And I,
did he appreciate that? Did he like that?
I think that's why he shot me in the leg.
Okay, yeah. All right. You know, for me, I picture John Gallus doing Sunday Morning with John Gallus, this
right.
very somber religious program every Sunday morning.
Yes.
And then you're throwing pies at him. How does this work out?
It doesn't gel. Yeah. By the way, that show has Sunday Morning
with John Gallus.
Yeah, I guess it's. That was the longest-running show of that nature.
That's right.
I don't know, 35, 30, almost as long as a weatherman, but he
did that on and on.
John Gallus was just a master at everything he did.
The voice is missed. We miss that voice.
Yes,
telling us what's next on Channel 4. Or we were watching that Winnie the Pooh video. My guest, Al Lutzberg and Bud Kraling, we were watching the Winnie the Pooh video that you guys did on More on Sunday in 1977 mm-hmm. with Dave Moore and Doug Moore. And I want to play just that intro again. We watched this before the show started.
Okay.
And are we ready? Okay.
Backstage at this moment, the members of the ensemble have gathered to fine-tune their instruments. Soloing is the stout, dim-witted, dreamy bear Winnie the Pooh, Mr. David Moore.
Oh, for the life of a bear. Oh, for the life of a Pooh.
As his snub-nosed, neurotic partner, Piglet, we have Mr. Alan Lotsberg.
There won't be anything fierce, will there?
As Master Christopher Robin, stalwart leader of the Enchanted Forest Adventures, Mr. Doug Moore.
Silly old bear, silly old bear.
As the enigmatic rabbit, Christopher's aloof confidant, Mr. William Carlson.
And if it's a pole, I should think it should be stuck in the ground, wouldn't you?
And featured is that marsupial matron Kanga, Ms. Cynthia Osborne.
Roo, 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 are you all right, Roo, dear?
Roo is played this evening by Mr. John Cairns, who is probably off taking another hot bath. As Owl, woodwise counselor and pedant, Mr. Alan Austin.
Encyclopedia! Rhododendron!
And finally, as Eeyore, sad-eyed, sardonic sawdust head, Mr. Jerome Bud Kraling.
Well, anyhow, it didn't rain.
We the Pooh, Tuffy Little Coffee.
Journalists doing Winnie the Pooh. I like it.
Oh, that was great fun. We did it in Studio 4. There must have been, I don't know, 30 of us standing there. And
where did the idea come up for this? Like, so who had the idea? Let's take Winnie the Pooh and do a reading of it on TV.
There was a newsman who wrote this thing, as I recall, Bud.
We were trying to think of his name a while ago.
Yeah, I can't come up with it.
He was around for several months. Was quite a producer, well known. Had a history of working in the theater. Mm-hmm. One of his other hits was The Miracle on 9th Street,
mm-hmm.
which I had a lot of fun doing, the whole cast at CCO. But we cannot remember the man's name. That was a very talented guy.
Yeah, it wasn't Walter Cronkite.
No, it wasn't Walter.
Eric Severide. Okay.
Yeah,
Let's take a break. Maybe we'll think of these names all during the break. But we'll take a break. We'll be back with Bud Kraling and Al Lotsberg on Flashback Twin Cities. Flashback Twin Cities, Tom Osmond with my guests. Where are we up to? Al Lotsberg first before that, Bud Kraling. I'll make sure I would give everyone equal, even billing today.
Whatever you want to
do.
Okay, all right.
Al Lotsberg is not my name. I don't know where you got that.
Robert Redford and Bud Kraling live in studio.
Right.
Willie Ketchum.
Yes.
Just do the Steve Cannon thing. Do three personalities. Just come in here and keep closing the door and we'll just do three voices. Piglet, Billy Ketchum.
Eeyore.
Eeyore's here. Eeyore. Right. The whole group's here.
I love that line. Well, it didn't rain.
Bud, we were talking off the air, and you said you worked in radio at three different radio stations before TV, and you said you might have done slightly better at TV than radio. 50 years is pretty good in TV. That isn't too bad.
That's hanging on, I tell you. Toward the last couple of years when I was working for Channel 4, the management would come to me and kind of give me an elbow in the ribs and say, what do you want to do? And I said, well, I'd like to stay one more year. I had in mind I wanted to stay 50. So I think they were very good to me, very generous, and let me hang around for 50 years. I started in radio at Carthage, Illinois, which is about the central part of the state, at WCAZ. And then I got a little better job in WGIL in Galesburg, Illinois. Then I was in the service for a couple of years. And my wife at that time was working in radio here in the Twin Cities. So I came out of the Army and joined her and got a job at WTCN, the Wesley Temple building. And the big thing was we were the ABC network, and I think I mentioned we had Walter Winchell on Sunday night. A big deal.
And Bud Crilling.
Uh-huh.
The T-shirt you're wearing today, Bud, let's skip the news and go right to the weather. And there's two snowed-in people here. This is based on a true story.
Evidently, a big snowstorm in the Twin Cities. I don't remember what year it was. And the man who does a wonderful job drawing cartoons for the Tribune, Sack.
Yep, Steve Sack.
He uses that name. Well, it's two guys covered with snow, and it looks like there's a monitor in the middle. And Dave said, well, Bud, I think we ought to skip the news and get right to the weather. I had these T-shirts made, and I made two, one for Dave. And he kind of ticked me off because I gave it to him, and he signed it on the side and gave it away.
I hope it was a nice young lady he gave it to.
No, some guy in the newsroom might.
I think he sold it for $10.
Might have. But
typical. So you and Dave did the news together since 1950. You did from 1957 to about 1987. Approximately, right?
Well, that's right. It's getting kind of fuzzy in my memory.
Because everyone changed shifts they were doing between 5, 6, and 10.
No. We started off doing the 6 o'clock and the 10 o'clock, the 10 o'clock was really the major newscast of the day. And, we had such a good time, and we did the happy talk, and he was a great, great guy to work with. And the happy talk, if I had an idea about something, and I wouldn't tell him what it was, and he would pick up so quickly on something that I said. It felt so much support there that you could trust the guy to bail you out or to keep you going or to make it sound much better than it had, I thought, to be.
And you've performed in Al's, you performed in several New Foley Foggies, correct? How many years did you do the show?
Oh, jeez. What's your guess, Bud?
Well, I think it was only maybe a couple, but maybe three.
Maybe it seemed like 10 because it was
yeah,
so slow.
Because
right, yeah.
Two shows a year. Yeah. And I had just retired, and Al and I had lunch, and I said to Al, I've really got to find something to do. When I told my family that I was leaving Channel 4, they were all quite upset. I said, well, you've got to find something to do. So Al and I had lunch, and first you offered me a part in the play, and I didn't think I could handle that. Well, then Al said, well, how about the spotlight? So I wound up doing the spotlight, and it was great fun. Once in a while, Al and I would do some skit in the show. But basically, I was the spotlight operator.
I'd be standing out there, and I'd say, we got Mr. Bud Crilling up there on spot. In a white spotlight, and I'd be alone on stage, and I'd say, Bud, do me a favor, will you? Give me a color that suits my personality.
Yeah.
And he'd flash vomit green.
Sure.
Something like that.
Oh, pink? Right.
Just, yeah.
Matching
stuff. Yeah. By the way, you and Dave Moore. Dave Moore and I was doing theater at the time, and so was Dave. He did a couple shows at the Old Log. And we always sat around and said, what if, you know, because he wanted to be an actor. He was first an actor, Dave Moore, and second a newsman. And I tried to do both. I did television and little bit of radio and live theater. So I was juggling out around all over. I was always in en route to one or the other. And Dave envied that in me because I was still in the theater. And he really is a fine actor. And if he had had his... Well, he did Mr. Roberts at the Old Log, as I recall. Yes. Twice, I think.
Yeah.
And the guy is really a great actor. He does character and stuff.
Now, the Old Log has just been sold after 60 years of ownership of Don Stoltz.
Yeah, yeah. Just sold it.
Yep.
Well, Dave played Mr. Ensign Pulver.
Oh, yeah.
And then the next, he played it twice, and then he was Mr. Roberts the second time he met him.
By the way, that's just a word for Don Stoltz. All those years out there, and he's finally bowing out and looking
guy.
For a buyer. He's just, he's Mr. Theater.
We and, we went to a show there this past winter. We actually had the stars in the studio here, Martini and Olive, and I went on a Tuesday night. This is December. It was not a great night to be out driving through town, and I went to the theater, and Don was there taking tickets, sweeping.
Yeah.
And I thought, Don, don't you have some kids or grandkids that can? And he was doing it himself, and he was great. He was having a great time and saying hi to everyone.
And two of his sons have worked with him, haven't they?
Mm-hmm.
Costume?
Set design and
directing.
Directing.
The relief I have is that the buyer of the theater is not a developer. It's someone who wants to preserve the theater and not make it into a resort or make it into a development.
Yeah.
That's the good news for all of us here.
That's the good news, yes, indeed.
There's a nice story about Don and Clellan Card. They both lived out in that Minnetonka area. And when Clellan Card was doing an Axel show, they would drive in to work together. And I assume they talked about what they were going to do on the way in. And one day, Card said to Don, I think we've got to have a script. I think we've got to organize this program a little bit better. Then Sound said, well, okay. So the next day, Clellan Card, brought in a little piece of paper about this big, about
two inches
long, with a couple of things. That was the script that he was going to do. So that was the last day of the script. But they all had a great time, and they came so awfully close with sort of blue humor on what they were doing.
Alan, let me ask you this question.
Yes.
How much of Clancy and Willie was scripted versus improv?
Good. Improv, of course, is, I think, two of the things I'm most petrified of is stand-up comedy and improvisation. And yet I seem to get by in those somehow. But I know when I did the puppet, and Harry Jones, the producer, said, fine, now I want you to talk. Come in like you're, say something. And I said, what? And I said, where's the script? He said, script?
Yeah.
There's no script.
Yeah.
I said, how do you know what to say? Make it up. What, do you read it off your cuff or the back of your eyelids? Or how do you find out? And all it was all ad lib. And when we'd always look for something to happen around which we could make a point or a joke or something. And I remember the Rangoon Ruby. Kids out there in their 50s may remember the Rangoon Ruby. It was stolen, and we had to go find it. And I was in charge of finding the Rangoon Ruby. I made it up every day as we went along.
And this is a daily show. This is not a one-week show you're trying to prepare. You're preparing a show every single day, Monday through Friday.
Yes, on Wednesday, John Gallus and I would do Thursday, Friday, and Monday. So we'd be one ahead. I think that was in case one of us died over the weekend. On Monday.
Yeah.
But we always had those shows lined up. And one time somebody said, why don't you just repeat the stuff you've done before? After 17 years, some of that stuff still works. And I reminded them at WCCO Television at that time, Channel 4 in the Twin Cities, it was a miser pool is what it was, because we'd say, people would ask me, well, how about the one from 2 months ago when you did the thing? Well, that's been erased and printed over about four dozen times.
Well, and that's, from my website, tcmedianow.com, which I shamelessly plug all hour long, there's a very little video of this that exists. There has been a couple events, the Hey Kids event at the theater downtown Minneapolis.
Right.
There's some stuff that exists, but very little, considering the number of hours of TV that was created, the first 50 years of TV.
Yeah.
There's so little footage that exists. A lot of times, you know, collectors are going to have this material, and that's where a lot of what I've been able to patch together, things Bud's had or things that people have discovered the site or discovered themselves. There are collectors that have this. There might be someone that has Willie and Clancy footage out there. So let's, you know, give me a call, 651-275-1220. Or if you want to say hi or have a question for Bud or Alan, 651-275-1220.
What's a Bud or Alan?
Butter Allen.
That's what we are. Yeah. Well, CCO was not very good about saving pictures.
No one was.
And tape. As you mentioned, they just recorded over many all the tapes to save money. So not very much was left. And the reason why some things from the bedtime news were saved, because they were filmed in the afternoon. And also, Clellan Card recorded one of his treehouse programs ahead of time. Yeah. So those were saved. Those were put on tape. So there are quite a few actual shows available at the, I think, at the Pavic Museum.
They do have a DVD of that, and it's a few items, but again, it's very little compared to the amount of material that was created.
There should be a lot more.
Think of how well More on Sunday would sell today if they had a product like that. They could sell the State Fair or sell the Pavic Museum. That would be
Or the Bedtime News.
The Bedtime News. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Wonderful comedy. Yeah. That was Dave as the actor. He was just marvelous in that.
There was a story that Walter Cronkite really loved the Bedtime News. And I guess he and Dave had correspondence back and forth about the Bedtime News, and I think Dave would send Walter copies of whatever copy he had of the Bedtime News.
Yeah, this picture here I just pulled up on the monitor is the videotape library, which someone commented, where are these tapes? I said, probably in a dumpster somewhere a couple decades ago.
Yeah, there was a famous story that somebody was looking for something, and they went out to the dumpster in the alley and went through the dumpster and found what they were looking for.
Well, Bud, you mentioned to me one time that when they were doing the 50th anniversary of WCCO, that they were looking for the retirees to provide footage to do the program with, because they didn't even have their own material to produce their own program with.
No. They formed a committee to help with the 50th anniversary, and they just told us outright that they hadn't really much of anything to use for the 50th anniversary. But whatever you took home, if you took photos home or tapes or something like that, bring it back.
It's our property. We want it back now. We're going to sue you otherwise.
Bring it back.
One tape that did exist, and I acquired this. This is the first hour-long Scene Tonight, the first time that WCCO did an hour-long newscast, which didn't do very well. But you guys had this great glass news desk, and you had all this.
Yeah.
You had a female doing the news, too, Susan Spencer. How crazy is that to have a female doing news?
Yeah.
Let's take a listen to the weather.
First Lady waved goodbye. They were saluted by the booming sound of 21 cannons. And as we wave goodbye to the chief executive, we say hello to our weatherman returned from the shores of Ely. How do you like your new home here?
I like the chair.
Comfortable?
Oh, yeah, the table and everything.
Orchestra's going to start pretty soon.
The dancing girls are coming.
Right.
You know, it reminds me of one of nature's proverbs, that the more things change, the more they stay the same. Now, we've got all these changes tonight, but I'm just back from Ely. That always seems to stay the same.
No matter where we put this set, you'll always return.
Always
from Ely,
be just
you?
Coming back from Ely.
I must say, you look very nice in there.
Oh, you look nice too in all those.
Thank
surrounds.
You, and you look nice. All of you look nice. Now let's get on with it.
All right, we'll hurry on to the weather now.
What a complimentary newscast that was! Everyone was.
That was a crazy desk. It was some kind of like a plastic thing that you could didn't have a front on it, so you could see the people's legs underneath. It didn't have a front, was it?
Right, very very modern.
Yeah, very modern. And it was finally sold to a magician.
Okay. how can you wear shorts though when you have
was the problem. Yeah. A lot of people would come in with a nice shirt and a jacket
and nothing else.
Yeah.
I hope there's some shorts on.
Or shorts anyway.
Well, before it gets too blue, let's take another break here. We're going to be back with Al Otsberg and Bud Crayling on Flashback Twin Cities on KLBB. Flashback Twin Cities, Tom Osmond with Bud Crayling and Al Otsberg, Robert Redford, a barking dog. Yeah, you take your pick of which character
Luigi,
you want to.
Don't forget Luigi.
Big cast.
Big cast of thousands.
Yeah.
So, Bud, now the question that we were talking about leaving CCO in 1996, and that was a long time ago now. You could have been doing weather for 10 more years. What made you leave? Why let him push you out? You should have went kicking and screaming out of the studios on 11th Street.
I don't know the thinking of the management. You have a feeling that they're looking for younger people all the time.
Mm-hmm.
And something new, some new face and a new approach to something. And the old people have kind of worn out. And I really wanted to, I loved doing the job. And of course, Dave died. Well, that was after I left the station, though. But so he kind of was tapering off, too. He was doing more on Sunday.
And not by choice, though. I mean,
I don't think he wanted to do that. So he wasn't on the news anymore.
Mm-hmm.
So they just gradually kind of push people out and get new people in. And
the thing I like always is, well, we want to get younger people because that's what the audience wants. And then you talk to the audience, and they say, why are you gone? So who is this audience they're talking to is what I want to know.
Do they really sample an audience? I've heard of people coming in as a committee advising on changes of the TV. I never saw the committee had that they would sample some views of the public.
Focus groups.
From their decision. I don't know what that really...
Well, the questions are... I've done them before, and the questions are... Do you feel comfortable with Al Otsberg? Do you want to have a beer with Al Otsberg afterward? Do you think that he's trustworthy? And somehow through those questions, they determine who is going to have a job on the news set or not. I know that Channel 4, Mike Binkley, who was a guest here a few weeks ago, now he's going to be on Sunday night now, and Jason DeRush is going to be on the morning. And there's some research behind this. I'm trying to figure out what is the scientific reasoning behind putting these people in different spaces that the audience is not used to, not comfortable with. And
I don't know what their thinking is.
They do surveys, though, don't they? I mean,
well, you hear that they do. I don't really know.
I don't either.
Either. We didn't know very much about the workings of the station, did we?
No, not
very much.
The best way to be,
background.
Right? Well, and think about this. You and Dave Moore and John Gallows, you know, Al Otsberg, you guys created this TV business, really, because the TV was like what the internet is today. They didn't figure out how to make it a profitable business. The technology was all new. How do we get people to make this work? You know, radio had been around for a long time, and then TV came around. And, you know, toward, 30 years into your job, then you have the Don Shelby's, Pat Miles, Mike Fairborn's. That had been a little bit challenging. It's like, hey, we created this. Now what are these guys coming in here to do our jobs for us now?
I don't know. I don't think I really had a chip on my shoulder about what we'd done. It was scary originally, and the first weather I did was at 10 o'clock at night, just the weather forecast, no news or sports.
Mm-hmm.
It was a standalone weather forecast.
Tasty Bread or Shell Weather Tower?
That was Tasty Bread originally. And that was all I'd live. I didn't really know much about the weather. I did a very, very long commercial, which kind of took half the time. And I was.
I thought you were going to say half an hour.
half the time. It was on 5 minutes. So that was all I'd live, and I kind of improved, I thought, as I went along and tried to find out something about the weather, what to say about the weather, and then did a long commercial. And all you did was to hold a loaf of Tasty Bread and maybe squeeze it, and how soft it is, what wonderful ingredients, and it's baked while you sleep was the big line.
And thankfully, Bob Franzen took vacation, and then you pitched some bread for a couple of weeks,
and
50 Bob, years later, you were still pitching something.
Yeah, Bob Franzen started doing Tasty Bread, and then he had a vacation coming up, so I substituted for him. And I always felt that I did a longer commercial than Bob did. So that's why I kept...
Well, the bread people like that. Keep talking about our bread.
Stayed on.
You mentioned Bob Franzen, and I've been working with him on and off for several years. He was in my first Folly show. He has a great Frank Sinatra-type voice.
He does.
A crooner kind of voice.
He does.
And recently he did a an event at the old log, and all the money from the proceeds of the what they did with the money was give it to the Salvation Army, and he's done that two or three times at the old log, and
yeah.
He's a heroic kind of guy.
Yeah,
still doing it.
So what's next? What's the next show, Al?
Right now I'm between engagements, I think is what actors say. So there's nothing going on right now, but. The Follies was a huge success for 17 years, as I said, and because of Bud and a bunch of other people. And Don Shelby, by the way, he came out one time, and we did the last show we did was called Radio Days,
mm-hmm.
D-A-Z-E, and Don Shelby was my guest, and so he came out, and we did a radio show live in front of these people. It ran about 6 minutes, and got no laughs whatsoever. So I dropped my trousers, and they all laughed. They thought that was quite funny.
You always got to stick with your beat, your backup material, right? If nothing else works, trip, drop something,
yep.
Right. Hit pies, that's always good, yeah.
Yep, I have a vaudeville and slapstick still lives, and I just love it.
Well, Bud, you were talking a little bit again about your bread commercials, but you became such a informed scientist over the years, after 40, 50 years, doing weather on Channel 4, and I have a clip here. That I just want to play. This is from 29 years ago this week. You were doing the weather from the University of Minnesota.
Oh.
And let's just take a listen.
We're going to go to the Bud at the university. How would you rank that eclipse? Hello, Bud.
Yes, okay. Sorry, I'm a little late in talking to you. There's a little demonstration going on in front of Kauffman Union. It's the students told me this is Sister Pat, who appears out here quite regularly to talk to the students on religious matters. Well, we're on location today at the University of Minnesota in front of Kauffman Union, the occasion. We've been watching the progress of the solar eclipse in disguise of one of the older students out here today. We've drawn quite a crowd around in front of Kauffman Union. What a beautiful place to talk about the weather. Well, we've got some little tidbits to mention about the weather today. Obviously, well, you can see, can't you? It's a nice sunny day. Our temperature is at 67 degrees.
That's what I like. Just look at the weather and then tell us what it is, and then that's our weather report.
Look at the sky, yeah. We always had a joke that the weather center at Channel 4 should be by a window,
mm-hmm.
so we could look out and see what the weather. And then a lot of people joke, too, like, what do? You hold up your finger, wet your finger and hold it up, and you know which way the wind is blowing. Some of those old things.
Well, I like the joke where you went to the New York Times, got the New York Times weather report and said, well, this is our weather report for the day, and I've done my research for the day.
Yeah, I got a lot of information out of the New York Times. When we first started to do the weather, the forecast came from the Weather Bureau,
mm-hmm.
and it came on the regular United Press wire service. And many guys would go through the news in the newsroom and throw away the weather. And I'd have to go down to the waste paper basket and dig through there to find the forecast. And I would dig out any kind of an information about the storms in Chicago or rain in California or something like that and work it into the weather. But I got a lot of weather from the waste paper basket.
A lot of weather should be in the waste paper basket.
Well, some of it.
Right.
And do you think the weather forecasts are any more accurate today with millions and millions of dollars spent on action Doppler? You take your pick of the name of the new technology this week. You know, it's going to rain. Last week it's sunny. It's going to be sunny. It's going to rain. There's wind. We can't plan tornadoes, you know, more than a few hours in advance. It's what's changed. The more things change, the more they stay the same.
I think it's an impression. You know, I have thought about this when people say to me, well, it's not any more accurate today than it was when you were doing the weather. They've got more tools to work with now. And I said, well, you know, I think the impression is that viewers have when I first started doing the weather, we only did the forecast for the next day.
Mm-hmm.
We didn't do a week's forecast. So you technically can remember what the forecast is when you just do it for one day.
Mm-hmm.
But when you get into 7 days, it gets kind of hazy. What's the Friday forecast?
Right.
And I think somehow people do have an impression from that. From the single-day forecast to the longer forecast. and they some have an idea that it's not as accurate as it used to be.
No, I think I think that you're the best weather tool again can be that window. It's amazing what you can find out if you look out the window. It's crazy.
Yeah.
So a couple of big birthdays coming up now. I'm not going to give away. Al, you're turning 49, and Bud's turning 48.
Yep.
Now, Bud, we shared last year. We went to the Pavic Museum and shared a birthday together.
Yes.
Not my birthday, but your birthday, and you were. Can I say you turned 94 last year, so right, in about three weeks you're going to be 95 years old, and that's fantastic. That's great to see you.
The 19th of June. I was born just before World War I ended. It ended about 6 months after I was born. I don't remember much about that. But
you didn't fight in World War I, right?
No,
you didn't go overseas. Okay, all right. And Al, you were, you know, you were just, I mean, that's 50 years before you were born.
That's
so.
Right. Thank you for that. I do remember during the beginning of World War II, which I was around for that, 41, I think it was August or whatever. And I was sitting on the front step with me and my buddy. We were both shoplifters at the time, working downtown, putting on several pair of pants. And
are you from Minneapolis?
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Okay, all right.
Yeah. My record's down in the courthouse if you want to look it up.
I already did the background check before I had you in the studio because I want to make sure that the monitors aren't missing, the tape reels aren't gone.
But we'd take this stuff and then sell it. You know, you get steal a $20 pair of trousers and you can sell it for $5. So we did pretty good at that.
You just drop them anyway. Why do you even need to buy pants?
But me and Joe, my neighbor, he would sit and watch the cars go by. And my first extra was he and I were sitting there chatting, looking at cars and identifying cars as they go by on the porch of where I lived on 14th in Chicago in downtown Minneapolis. And I hadn't heard this except in movies. I heard some guy say, "Extra, extra, read all about it, extra." And I said, "An extra?" At this time, and I was, never mind how old it was. But it was 1941.
Was it Sid Hartman selling papers in the corner? Was that who it was?
That came later. But here this guy was, "Extra, extra, the president is dead." And FDR just been died. And so I thought, what? We'll never have a president again, because that's all I ever knew was one president.
That's right.
I didn't know they went through a process. Elections? What is that? That sounds naughty. And so what are we going to do for a president? I was too young to run. And so,
you mean we choose someone? I mean, we actually have to choose between
two
different people? Okay. Well,
they only do that in communist countries.
Right.
Anyway, it was a shock for me. First extra.
And, Bud, you last year we saw you at the Weatherman, the Singing Lady. Is doing any events planned this year?
No, my wife and I have kind of phased out doing that. We did it for a couple of years, and that was a great title, the Weatherman and the Singing Lady. My wife, Shirley, is a professional singer, taught music for a number of years, and I think we had a lot of fun. We sang to CDs for a while, but then we found a wonderful piano player who could change keys and play anything that you wanted to do. So that was sort of the better programs that we did when we had the piano player.
You played at the Minnesota History Center last spring. It was a fantastic
crowd,
and we applauded, and it was great. People asked me, like, what does Bud Crilling do now? I said, well, he's still performing. He's still singing. He's still doing radio interviews.
Yeah. One of my favorite songs is that Janis Joplin song, Me and Bobby McGee.
That's what I think of when I think of Bud Crilling.
You know,
he'd sing Janis Joplin. Real quick, I want to play a couple notes here from Facebook. Willie Ketchum, play me another Wally Gator or Touche Turtle cartoon.
Oh, jeez. Touche Turtle. Wally Gator, yeah. That was John Gallus, I remember, at that time, Wallace the hot dog thief, I don't remember who that was. We had a setup where John Gallus with a hot dog and a giant wiener in the hot dog, and he'd hold it up to his face, and just about ready to take a bite, I would reach around the other end and pull the hot dog out. So now he's chewing on dough, and that was all there was, but that was a surprise for John. He didn't enjoy that.
Poor John.
It was much like getting a pie in the face.
You know, no wonder he didn't invite you guys on to Sunday morning with John Gallus. Bud, Alan, thank you for coming in today. This has been great. Let's make it an annual tradition, okay? Next 5 years, every year we'll come in June and
do
the show.
Great. We'll look forward to that. Great.
This is Flash by Twin Cities. Tom Osmond. Join me next week with Jason Davis of KSDP. Till then, so long.